Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
All right, so Matt, I don't know if you heard about this, but the guy who invented the wind chill factor died today. He was 95, but he felt 85.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, I'm good, man.
Good.
I'm good. I'm sitting here. I'm looking. I'm working on my posture.
Yeah.
If I go back and watch us, by the end of the show, I'm like down here.
Yeah. Yep. I do that too. I've been trying to work on my posture just normally, like sitting in the living room or walking, you know, walking with shoulders back.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I've realized here I hunch more because I've got the mic right here and I'm coming into the mic and then I want to get down to the mic. So I need to set the mic like up here or something. So I'm reaching up for it.
I keep adjusting mine because I'm like, I'm going, mm-hmm. It's like I adjust my chair. I'm like, what the heck is wrong with me?
Right. So real quick, we want to say, go check out patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. You can sign up for one of our three levels. If you just get that QR code there, if you're watching the video, it'll take you right to Patreon. But we've got the three different levels. We got a 1, a 5, and a 10. And all of the levels get a bonus episode a week. So every week after we do the main episode, we record a bonus episode. And we put one of those out every week, even on dark weeks. Occasionally we miss one due to unforeseen circumstances, but otherwise every level gets a weekly bonus episode. Then if you move up to 5 and 10, you get the weekly bonus, plus you get the ad-free audio and video versions of the show if we have an ad. Then if you move up to the 10, you get all of that, plus you get our second show, Side Quest, which we record every week as well. And that's a totally different take for me and Matt. It has nothing to do with Graveyard Tales. Sometimes it crosses over with a topic that might be done on Graveyard Tales, but very rarely does that happen. Most of the time, it's a trivia game that Matt has, or I'm telling Matt a historical story or a survival story or something like that. And it's just, if you were hanging out with me and Matt and talking, that's what you would get.
Yep.
We've done, gross jelly beans. We've drank weird sodas, you know, we've had guests, which we need to do guests more. I'm going to just start pulling random people in from Walmart. That should be interesting. But go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales, and sign up to become a patron. Also, if we have an ad that week, we will have the code and the link in the show notes. So go down there, check out our sponsors. That helps bring them back to Graveyard Tales because they realize you heard about them from us. So on that note, Matt, that's all I got. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay. So tonight we're talking about another haunted place, and it's probably somewhere you wouldn't expect. You see it in movies, you know, couples rowing little boats, kids feeding ducks, rich people jogging in $600 shoes. You know, there's a guy playing a saxophone while there's another guy painting himself silver and he stands completely still. You know, look, this is New York's backyard. Uh-huh. Okay. But here's the thing. It gets really weird at night. And, you know, not, hey, there's a raccoon looking at me funny, weird. It gets weird in the way that all of Manhattan suddenly goes quiet. I mean, you are standing in the middle of one of the loudest cities on earth, but somehow all you can hear is wind in the trees and footsteps behind you that may or may not belong to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the deeper you dig into the history of where you are, the more you start to realize that this place may actually be one giant ghost story disguised as a park.
Right.
Because underneath all of this beautiful scenery, there are buried communities. There are forgotten graves, murders, suicides, drownings, hidden caves, displaced families, and so many strange stories. It'll make you wonder what exactly is going on here. So tonight, Adam and I are going to take a walk through Central Park after dark.
Yep.
Yep. And honestly, the next time you go, you may think, maybe I shouldn't wander off the path.
Yeah, right.
So with all places like this, we really have to look at the history. And the history of the land that is now Central Park plays such a pivotal role into why people may be having paranormal experiences in Central Park at night. So, Adam, tell us about the history of Central Park in New York City.
All right. So, as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. Everything we talk about tonight is sourced and referenced down there in the bottom of the show notes. So, just scroll down. You can find all the links. Now, Central Park is one of the most remarkable public spaces in New York City. It's a 19th century planned park in Manhattan created to give New Yorkers a large public green space and built through one of the city's biggest public works projects. Its history stretches from early planning in the 1840s and 1850s to major redesign, decline, and restoration in the 20th and 21st centuries. And that long history makes the park far more than just a stretch of trees and lawns in the middle of the city. It's a landscape shaped by ambition, displacement, design, labor, and reinvention. Now, the push for a great park began as New York City grew rapidly and became more crowded, polluted, and built up in the mid-1800s. So they were seeing, hey, it's getting crowded. We need some green amidst mm-hmm. all this concrete. Mm-hmm. And city leaders and civic reformers wanted a large public landscape where people of all classes could find fresh air and recreation, and the state approved land acquisition in 1853. In many ways, Central Park was imagined as a cure for the problems of the modern city: congestion, smoke, noise, and the lack of open space. But the place chosen for that vision already had a complex human landscape of its own.
That's right.
So that, you know, that ties in a lot mm-hmm. into what Matt's going to be talking about. But the park site was not empty wilderness. It contained rocky hills, marshland, farms, small dwellings, industrial uses, and communities, including Seneca Village, a predominantly African-American settlement that was displaced by eminent domain. That detail is essential to the park story because the creation of this celebrated public space came at a very real cost to the people already living there. So what was Seneca Village? Let's look at Seneca Village real quick. Now, Seneca Village was a mostly African-American community that existed on the land that later became part of Central Park. It began in 1825 and grew into a small, middle-class neighborhood with homes, churches, a school, and burial grounds. It was demolished because the city used eminent domain to clear the land for Central Park. So the residents were forced out in 1857, and the city then tore down the buildings to make room for the new park. Seneca Village was one of the few places in the 19th century New York where black families could own property and live with some safety from discrimination and overcrowding that they faced elsewhere in the city. Its destruction was framed by officials as serving the, quote, greater good, but it displaced a real established community. The village included about 50 homes, three churches, a school, and burial grounds, like I said, by the mid-1850s. After demolition, very little of the community remained visible, and historians still know only part of what happened to many former residents. That loss sits beneath the park's beauty like a buried layer of history, easy to miss unless someone stops to ask who was here before the lawns and paths.
Does this not remind you of like Lake Lenore and all that stuff?
Yeah.
You know, these areas.
Haunted lakes we've talked about.
Yeah, where they flooded an area that was a neighborhood that had people living there. And just like Seneca Village had graveyards,
mm-hmm.
you know, had churches, you know,
yep.
had history.
And through eminent domain was taken over.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not water in this case, but I mean, it's a public park, but it's the same principle there.
Yep,
you know, unlivable space. You're right, there's history buried underneath there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the design and construction began after a design competition produced the winning plan by Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaux. Now, Matt, I don't know if you remember that name, Frederick Law Olmsted. But we have talked about him before in previous episodes. He's come up. But their greensward plan, quote unquote, shaped the park into a pastoral landscape of winding paths, lakes, meadows, bridges, and separated circulation routes for pedestrians, carriages, and horseback riders. So construction began in 1857 or 1858, depending on whether you count early work or the full build-out. Now, the construction effort was enormous. Workers moved millions of cubic yards of stone, earth, and topsoil. They planted hundreds of thousands of trees and shrubs, and they built roads, arches, and bridges by hand. Many laborers were immigrants, and the project eventually cost far more than originally planned. Shocking, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That a government project
it's a
would,
common theme, right?
Yeah. Every time we get a government project, it's like, oh, well, it's way more than we thought it would be. But
yeah.
Now, Frederick Law Olmsted. And I said we talked about him before, but we didn't really go into him much, so let's go into him. He was an American landscape architect and reformer. And then Calvert Vaux was an English-born architect and designer. So together, they created the winning plan for Central Park called the Greensward Plan. Olmsted became famous for helping define landscape architecture in the United States, while Vaux brought architectural skill and design experience. Their partnership began when Vaux invited Olmsted to join him in the Central Park competition, and they later worked together on other parks and urban plans. So their design vision was to make the park feel like a natural, peaceful escape inside a growing city. They wanted a landscape with winding paths, scenic bridges, lakes, meadows, and carefully framed views that would separate people walking, riding, and driving, so the park felt orderly and restful. A major part of the idea was to hide crosstown traffic on sunken transverse roads, so the park could stay visually continuous instead of being split up by streets. That approach was considered innovative and became one of the defining features of Central Park's design.
Crosstown traffic.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorites. I love that song.
Well, I find it interesting because here we in Texas, we've done sunken roads for like the toll roads and the HOV lanes and stuff. Mm-hmm, they've gone down and above. But I remember when they were building it, they started building these things before I moved to Tennessee. And then when I came back, they were done building these underground roads.
Mm-hmm.
And Tennessee doesn't have those.
No.
You got through mountain roads.
Yeah, you know, right.
Blast a hole through a mountain. But so coming back to these underground roads, it was crazy. It was innovative. It really helped congestion. I think Nashville needs to do that, but y'all sit on so much limestone, I don't think y'all could.
Man, yeah. It'd be like, you think blasting through mountains hard, you know, try digging through all this diggum rock.
Right. You know? You think construction on Briley takes forever. Just wait until you try to put an HOV lane underneath it.
So how long do you go under in these roads? Is it like just a big long tunnel?
Some of them are tunnels. Some of them, it's actually a scoop out. So you're open top,
yeah,
but you're down below the, like say 635 that goes along, then the HOV lane cuts off and goes down below it a ways. So you go under some bridges and you're in like a valley that you go around and through. So it's pretty interesting. You can go from below the interstate to then coming up and over the interstate, and it's just interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's really confusing when I move back.
The idea of driving through like a really, really long tunnel, it makes me nervous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, every time I'd be like nervous. My car's going to break down and I'm going to be in this tunnel.
Yep.
I don't know why that would creep me out, but it does.
Well, I tell you, we don't have as many closed-in tunnels as, like, when we go to Florida sometimes, if we take a different way, mm-hmm, there is a long tunnel that you go under a lake.
Yeah.
To get...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that creeps me out, because I'm like, what if it springs a leak?
Like the tunnel?
Yeah.
You know, that goes under the English Channel?
Yeah. What if it springs a leak and I'm stuck in here in traffic and it starts flooding?
Yeah.
You know, if there's traffic going that way, I won't take that road.
And you know what's weird about me though? It's like long bridges. I'm fine.
Hmm.
I don't know why. Like that bridge that goes into Tampa.
Oh yeah.
That crazy long bridge. No problem.
You need to go, the one in,
don't put me under anything.
Yeah, the one in Louisiana, it's like a mile long.
Yeah.
Mile or two, I don't know. Whoever lives in Louisiana, let me know how far off I am. But it goes forever. And that was creepy the first time I got on it. Because I think about running off the side into the lake. Somebody comes and hits me and knocks me off into the lake.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Now, thanks.
You're welcome. If I got to worry about it, so do you, bro. Now, their work at Central Park shaped later parks and park systems, including projects in Brooklyn, Buffalo, and elsewhere around the country. So the basic idea of a designed urban refuge from city stress became one of their most important legacies. Central Park was not just a park. It became a model for how a city could carve out calm, beauty, and public access inside the pressure of dense urban life. Now, the first sections opened before the park was fully finished, with the lake among the earliest features accessible to the public. By the early 1860s, much of the park south of 72nd Street was complete, and the park was already becoming a major public destination. So Central Park was heavily regulated in its early decades. Rules restricted activities such as large gatherings and casual commercial uses, reflecting an effort to preserve a controlled, quote, improved landscape rather than a free-for-all commons. Even so, it became widely used for strolling, carriage rides, skating, rowing, and concerts. By the 1870s, the park was nearing completion, and it had already become an important symbol of New York's civic ambition. Over time, however, its use became more democratic, and working-class New Yorkers pushed for broader access and amenities, including Sunday concerts, playgrounds, and additional recreation features. So new features continued to appear throughout the end of the century and into the 20th century, including the zoo, playgrounds, and other facilities that moved the park away from a strictly picturesque 19th century design toward a more active urban park. Central Park went through cycles of alteration, neglect, and restoration. And in the 1930s, under Robert Moses, the park saw major changes, including new playgrounds and landscape interventions that reflected modern recreation planning. After World War II, the park remained central to city life, but increasingly suffered from deferred maintenance, vandalism, and fiscal strain, especially during New York City's broader urban decline in the mid-20th century. Well, by the 1960s and 1970s, Central Park had deteriorated badly in many areas. So in response, citizens and civic leaders helped create the Central Park Conservancy, which became the key force in restoring and managing the park in partnership with the city. That restoration revived lawns, structures, paths, trees, and landscapes, and it helped turn Central Park into the heavily maintained, world-famous urban park that it is today. So now it receives tens of millions of visits a year and remains one of New York City's defining public spaces. Can you imagine, Matt, a park near you getting tens of millions of visitors a year?
No.
I would hate that.
No. Now, yeah, it's too much traffic.
Right. But that's the thing about Central Park. On the surface, it's one of the most famous green spaces in the world. It's a place built for beauty, for escape, for the people of New York to breathe a little easier in the middle of the city, because there's oxygen being pumped out from the trees instead of the buildings, so they can breathe a little easier that way. But underneath all of that history, that the history is a lot heavier than most people realize.
Mm-hmm.
There were communities there before the park, families, homes, lives. And when the park was built, a lot of that was pushed aside and buried. And maybe that's why Central Park feels the way it does after dark. Because places don't just hold stories. Sometimes they hold on to everything that happened there. The laughter, the loss, the construction, the silence, all of it. And in a place this old, this layered, this crowded with memory, it's not hard to understand why people have spent so many years telling stories like Matt's going to touch on here in a second. So with the history now done, let's head into the darker side of Central Park.
Okay, so as Adam mentioned at the top of the show, one of the most important and honestly the saddest parts of Central Park's story is something a lot of people have never heard of, and that's Seneca Village. I mean, there was a community of people there, and I mean, it's not just a few scattered houses. This was a real neighborhood, and a large portion of the residents were free African Americans, which was especially significant in the mid-1800s because property ownership could actually grant black men voting rights in New York at the time. So this was critical. These weren't squatters. These were landowners. These were families. These were people building lives. And then New York decided that they wanted a giant park. And suddenly the people living there just kind of became inconvenient. And as Adam said, they used eminent domain to force everybody out, demolish the neighborhood, and really erased most traces that it had ever existed. But then you find out that there were burial grounds there too. And depending on which historian or researcher you listen to, there may still be graves underneath parts of the park today. Now, like we've talked about in some of these flooded towns, they made efforts, or at least they claim to have made efforts, to remove and relocate those deceased individuals.
We've seen that though with right. lakes and stuff
and
too.
And it didn't necessarily go as planned. Whereas the people that were hired to do so either halfway did the job, or just neglected it, and you know, there were still many, many graves left. I don't think that at this time in history there would be any reason to assume that they did a bang up job at moving and relocating all of these graves.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, that's naturally led to a lot of paranormal speculation. Visitors and paranormal enthusiasts have reported feelings of unease around the former Seneca Village area, like cold spots or shadow figures, or that classic somebody is watching me feeling. And look, we always try to separate folklore from fact on this show, but honestly, if there's anywhere in Central Park that feels emotionally haunted, it would be here.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes the haunting isn't a ghost. It, you know, it's not a sheet floating around going, ooh. It's the history that haunts the area and the memory of a place that just refuses to disappear. I mean, honestly, if I got kicked out of my home so rich people could power walk through a fake forest, you know, I'd haunt the place too.
Right.
I mean, totally. Right. And I would especially haunt joggers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cause like I said, if you see me running, there's something chasing me. I'm not, you know, so you're just out running. I'm coming after you. I'm going to mm-hmm. give you a reason to run.
It would be a toss up for me between joggers and the bikers that ride in the middle of the street.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
on your left.
It. Yeah. Ride in the street. That's fine. But move over when a 2,000-pound vehicle is coming your way. Let them pass and then you can get back over.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Jeez.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
But, you know, speaking of fake forests, let's talk about the Ramble. The Ramble is probably the creepiest part of Central Park.
Is there a man there? Is he the Ramblin' Man?
Yeah, the Ramblin' Man. He was born that way.
I love it when I can pass off a baton to you and you just complete that race. I love it.
But the Ramble is a heavily wooded section filled with twisting trails, dense trees, and rocky outcroppings, hidden corners and paths that suddenly seem to lead nowhere. Which means the designers of Central Park apparently sat down and said, you know what Manhattan needs? A serial killer maze. That's what they need.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And everyone signed off on it. But at night, the Ramble becomes genuinely unsettling. The city noise fades away. The pathways get darker. And because everything twists and curves, you can never really see that far ahead of you. Or behind you, for that matter. People have reported hearing footsteps following them, or whispers in empty areas, or movement in the trees. And that overwhelming sensation that someone is nearby, even when there's no one there. Now, skeptics would say that's just your brain reacting to isolation and darkness, which, you know, we've seen before. You know, when you go in your basement with the light on and you're knocking around and you find what you're looking for, but then you race to the steps when you turn off the light.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happens. It's your brain telling you, as soon as that light goes out, there's something down here that's going to get you, even though you're standing in the middle of the room with nothing there but you.
Same place you were with the lights on.
Exactly.
And there was nothing around you, but all of a sudden now there's 15 serial killers coming at you because the lights went off.
Exactly. So there's a lot to be said for your mind playing those kind of tricks on you. And, you know, there's probably a lot of that that happens. But to counterpoint that, no thank you. Okay, I don't like that feeling, and I certainly don't like that feeling in public, and I don't want to feel that feeling in a dark park in the middle of a bustling city that I can't seem to hear anymore.
Right, right.
But when you learn about one of the strangest hidden features in Central Park history, then it really kind of gets to you, and that's Ramble Cave. Also known as Indian Cave, apparently during construction, workers discovered this natural cave and decided to incorporate it into the park, which that sounds pretty cool. Until you realize this cave quickly became associated with robberies, assaults, disappearances, suicides, and all sorts of disturbing incidents.
No thanks.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't wander into caves when I'm out in the middle of, you know, nowhere.
No.
Why would I think a cave in the middle of Central Park would be better?
Exactly.
It is a cave. Okay.
Right.
It may not be a bear in there, or it may be a bear.
And it could be. It's New York. You never know. But it could be anything. I mean,
right.
And you don't know. I mean, I'm more afraid of humanity than ghost or nature.
Exactly. Is that a ghost or is that a guy wearing a sheet? I'm not so sure which is scarier.
Yeah, I'd rather see the ghost than just some dude. If there's just some dude walking around wearing a sheet, we got problems.
Yes.
You need to run from the man wearing just a sheet.
If y'all have seen that guy, you don't talk to that guy. No. You go the other way. If he's on your side of the street, you cross the street.
Uh-huh. Well, there's Sheet Boy again. Let's move.
Oh, but you know
he's wearing a fitted sheet today. That's even worse for some reason.
But, you know, because of all of this, Ramble Cave, the city eventually sealed it shut in the 1930s. In the 30s.
Yeah.
Imagine what it would be like now.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would be crazy.
I think it's called Ramble Cave because they knew we were going to ramble on about it for way too long.
Yeah. So when a city permanently seals a cave that's inside a park, my immediate assumption is, well, something horrible definitely happened in there.
Right.
You know,
there's literal bodies buried in there if they sealed it.
That's it. It can't be good. Whatever. No. It cannot be good.
No.
No one seals a cave because everything was fantastic. You know?
Right. This is a great place. Let's seal it.
Yeah, we sealed this cave because morale was just too high, you know? And of course, once you permanently close a creepy cave in the middle of New York City, ghost stories immediately explode.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. People started claiming strange sounds could still be heard near the sealed entrance, like voices, crying, and movement underground. And whether any of that is true or not, the idea of a hidden sealed cave beneath Central Park is already creepy enough on its own. Okay?
Yeah. We can still hear Fitted Sheet Boy
That's right.
down in that cave.
That's right.
Sounds like he's got the no pee liner under that. It's crinkling a lot.
Then there is Belvedere Castle, which sounds fake because it kind of is. It's basically this Gothic looking miniature castle sitting on top of Vista Rock overlooking the park. And during foggy weather, it looks like Dracula's summer home. Okay? Especially at night. Now, Belvedere Castle has become attached to one of Central Park's most famous ghost legends. The lady in, I'll give you three guesses and the first two don't count.
White.
White. Yes. Yep. The lady in white. Witnesses describe seeing a pale woman in old-fashioned clothing wandering near the castle or drifting through the nearby wooded areas before vanishing. Pretty classic ghost stuff, okay?
Yeah.
And look, normally I would roll my eyes at a little woman in white story because every haunted location on Earth has one.
Yep.
America has so many ghost women in white wandering around that apparently no woman in history ever died wearing literally any other color. Okay.
Yeah. It seems that way.
Yeah. Why don't we have ghosts in sweatpants? Okay.
We will in 20 years.
Yeah. Ghost Steve in cargo shorts. You know, we get that question. You think about it and you're like, meh, but people ask that question.
Yeah.
Why are ghosts always in Victorian clothing? Why are they always in this old English garb or pioneer or a Civil War uniform? I guess because it just takes a long time to, you know, become a ghost. You know,
it might take that long before you can appear solidly enough where people can see your clothes.
Well,
so in 20 years, we're going to have people ghosts in Walmart in pajamas.
Yeah. Yes. 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 That's it. You know, I mean, you know, the modern, fashion, you know, it's going to take a few more years before that appears in Ghost. Because, I mean, look, I've seen that, the handbook for the recently deceased, you know, yeah. It's pretty thick. And I'm sure that you got to get at least 3/4 of the way through it before you figure out, oh, this is how you actually do this and can make yourself appear. So that ghost on a skateboard wearing Vans and a hat backwards, you know, that's going to take a while, you know.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, if you're waiting on that guy to read that book, it may take even longer.
Oh, okay? Yeah. he's too busy hitting the streets and skateboarding down Central Park in areas he wasn't allowed to when he was alive.
That's exactly it. So. Yes. No skateboarding. I was like, man, you know what? You see those signs in the weirdest areas. No skateboarding here. Why?
When I used to skateboard, those drove me nuts because you'd go, what? I'm just trying to cross this area to get to, like, I'm a chicken in a road. I'm just trying to get to the other side. I'm not going to, there is nothing here for me to grind on or jump off of, but you've got a no skateboarding sign here.
As somebody roller skates through the same area.
Yeah. Rides a bike and knocks over 3 children from their bike. And you're like, why can't I skateboard here?
You know, but even with all that, I will say Belvedere Castle absolutely has got the atmosphere for this. You know, fog rolling through the trees, old stone walls, the sounds of the city echoing in the distance. I mean, you could tell me literally anything haunted. You could say anything haunted that place, and I'd at least consider it, you know, for a minute. Now, nearby, you've got Bethesda Terrace, and the Angel of the Water statue. Now, this is one of the most beautiful spots in the entire park. But like many beautiful places in New York, it has a weird undercurrent to it. People have reported hearing unexplained voices in the arcade tunnels beneath the terrace. Some claim they've seen figures standing near the fountain late at night before disappearing. Others talk about strange echoes and disembodied laughter, and that could all just be the acoustics, you know, sure.
Yeah.
But acoustics become significantly less comforting when you're alone at midnight. You know, there's nobody else to make this noise.
Right. Doesn't make it much better.
Yeah. And everything becomes paranormal when you're tired enough. You know, at 2 a.m., I could hear my refrigerator make one weird noise, and suddenly I'm ready to call a priest. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there. You know, we bought a new refrigerator. It makes all kinds of noises. And it made one the other night that just about shot me bolt upright in bed. I'm like, what was that?
Dude, we had to get a new fridge a while back. And we got one that makes the ice balls.
Oh, yeah,
the whiskey. The first time that dropped those balls into the container, I about crapped my pants.
I bet. Because
these big, and they just drop it into a plastic holder. So it went bang, 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 bang. Dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, when Adam bought this is completely off topic. But when Adam bought this refrigerator, okay, he told me about that they got the one that made those ice balls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're big. They're about, you know, whether those are like whiskey balls you put in the whiskey. So, I mean, it's pretty good size, like a racquetball.
Yeah.
I was a little jealous because I'm like, I want a refrigerator that'll do that. Well, so it turns out that our refrigerator died in December, right before Christmas. And so we had to go buy a new refrigerator. And I'm texting him as we are looking. Now, as you know, as really the sole man in the house, because Brooks got no say in the refrigerator.
Yeah, right.
He wasn't there. Nobody was interested in his opinion. I knew that I was outvoted. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it actually came down to that refrigerator that makes the ball ice. Or the other one. And I must say, as cool as it would be to have that ice, the one we got, it is amazing. The one we got instead, you could either get the ice ball or the one, it has a middle drawer, its own section. You've got the refrigerator, and then you got the freezer below, and then you have this drawer in the middle. And you can make this drawer do whatever you want. You can make it a refrigerator. You can make it a freezer.
Yep.
You can adjust the temperature all the way.
Yep.
And when you pull that drawer out at our house, it is like we've robbed a convenience store. There is canned drinks like you wouldn't believe. We have every kind of canned drink you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
There's energy drinks. There's Coke. There's, you know, whatever, ginger ale. There's, you know, my oldest, you know, Truly seltzers, which I would never touch. You know, there's a beer section in there. I mean, it is the coolest thing to have this extra drawer. So I finally had to concede that we made the right call with the drawer. Cause I was like, I think I would have gotten bored with the ice balls after a while, but it was kind of cool. Anyway.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't use them as much.
Total tangent for this.
Yeah. I don't use them as much as I thought I would.
I know. Look, we bought the Ninja Creamy after you told me we got one and we didn't use it as much as we thought we would. And now I can say we don't use it as much as we thought we would. It's cool, you know, but it's a lot of prep work, you know, to make sure that you can actually use it.
It sure is.
When you realize you want to make something with it, and you should have done it last night.
We run into that all the time.
But I don't want it on Sunday night. I want it on Saturday night.
I want it tonight. That's the problem.
Okay. Back on track. Our refrigerators are cool, and they make crazy noises.
So, yes.
Okay. Now, the waters at Central Park, they have their own reputation, okay? The lake, Harlem Mere, all of these waterways scattered throughout the park. And over the decades, there have been accidental drownings, suicides, recovered bodies, and violent crimes all connected to the water, which that, of course, feeds paranormal stories.
Oh, yeah.
Visitors have reported hearing splashing sounds with nobody there. cries for help, phantom rowboats appearing in heavy fog. Now, that's a different one.
That's new.
And most of those, they've got to be urban legend, especially the rowboat one. You know, I'm sure there's a fantastic story or stories attached to seeing a phantom rowboat. Now, the cries for help thing, we've heard that before, okay, with other things that maybe aren't so urban legendy.
Yeah, that's something trying to trick you.
Yeah.
Don't fall for it.
Come, you know, because if any, especially as a parent, anything that will make you run to the water is hearing a child cry for help and splashing. Yeah. I mean, any parent will run, no matter what it is. It doesn't have to be your child. You will bolt. And sometimes, as we've learned, there are things that know that and will lure you in by doing just that.
For sure, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. The rowboat, probably urban legend. Cries for help, not so sure. But Central Park has seen real tragedy. And one of the most infamous cases happened in the 1980s with the murder of Jennifer Levin by Robert Chambers, the so-called preppy killer. And then there was the Central Park jogger case and another horrifying murder involving a teenager named Michael McMurrow, whose body ended up in the lake. So when people talk about Central Park feeling off at night, they aren't imagining the darkness that hangs over this place. A lot has happened here. A lot. And parks are weird like that. I mean, during the daytime, they absorb life. And at night, they seem to remember death. And then you've got one of my favorite legends in the park. The Ghost Skating Sisters.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. This story says two Victorian-era sisters, often called Janet and Rosetta Vandervoort, still appear during winter near the ice. Witnesses supposedly see them gliding silently together before vanishing into mist or snowfall. Now, is that true? Probably not. But
I like it.
Honestly,
though,
I love it. I mean, that's great. I mean, that is an absolutely great story.
Mm-hmm.
Because compared to all the murders and darkness, it's oddly beautiful. I mean, like, even the ghosts in Central Park are a little classy. You know, you don't get chains rattling. You get synchronized paranormal figure skating, you know.
That's really cool.
New York ghosts are fancy. What do you say?
Yeah, I would love to see that. That's...
I know that would be an incredibly cool thing. Somebody ought to make a hologram of it, you know, and project it out there during the wintertime. It'd be neat.
Just randomly put it out there.
Yeah.
And it, all of a sudden it gets a little foggy. And next thing you know, you see these two twin sisters skate by you and then disappear as they get past you. Mm-hmm. You're like, I don't know whether to be scared or in awe. That was cool.
Yep. Yep. And finally, there's something that is psychologically strange about Central Park itself. And the fact is, it's artificial. It is completely designed. Every path, every hill, every lake, every tree placement. The park was engineered to feel natural, which means in a weird way, Central Park is kind of an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's manufactured wilderness, a dream version of nature sitting in the middle of one of the busiest cities on Earth. And maybe that's why ghost stories thrive there, because Central Park feels disconnected from reality. I mean, I've thought that before. You've seen it in the movies and you see it in photographs and you look up and you're looking at, you know, million-dollar apartments overlooking the west end of the park. And you look down and you see a vast meadow surrounded by trees. It's this really bizarre juxtaposition mm-hmm. of, you know, supreme city life with this oddly pastoral imagery right below it. I understand, you know, that idea of this is just manufactured nature, you know, right outside. But, you know, it's manufactured very well.
Yeah, it is. It looks, I mean, if you didn't know the story about it, you would think everything just built up around it and they just left that alone.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's not the case.
Mm-mm.
And it really does seem disconnected from reality, especially at night. So you step off a Manhattan sidewalk and you walk 20 yards into the trees and suddenly it feels like the city vanished right behind you. I mean, it is the perfect environment for folklore, for ghosts, for stories, for your imagination to start asking uncomfortable questions.
Manufactured time slip, basically.
Exactly. And if millions of people walk through one place carrying grief, fear, loneliness, violence, hope, tragedy, and memory for more than 150 years, maybe some of that sticks around. And maybe that's what a haunting really is. Or maybe it's just raccoons. I mean, you know, in New York, honestly, it could go either way.
Giant New York sewer rats. Who knows?
Yeah. But what do you guys think? I mean, there has been a lot of tragedy and loss and emotion that has been... that has occurred right on the land where Central Park sits. And I would dare say that a lot of people that aren't, you know, familiar with New York, actually knew the story of Seneca Village. I didn't before I read this, you know, did this,
I didn't either.
Did the research here. I didn't realize that that's how Central Park came to be. Nope. You know, it's not something that's really discussed, but it is a strange bit of history when you consider that you know, all of that, all of those families, you know, all of those homes just went away to make room for this park. And when you're standing out there tossing a football back and forth, there 100 years, 200 years ago, somebody may have been throwing a football back and forth in that same spot in their backyard.
Right.
You know, right. And there you are in the middle of, you know, one of the biggest cities on the planet. So there is a creep factor to that, no doubt. But what do y'all think? You think all of that has allowed Central Park to hang on to some of that emotion, that maybe there's, you know, some stone tape stuff going on? Are there graves underneath the park itself that's, you know, producing the energy that may allow for hearing some voices or hearing some cries out across the water? Tell us what you think. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Jump in there. We have thousands of people sharing stories just like this, you know, telling jokes, asking for help with paranormal problems, you know, whatever. It's just a great community because all of us we just love talking about this wild stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And thank you to everyone who has supported the work that Adam and I do over the years. We literally, we say this a lot, it's like a broken record, but we can't do it without you. And we sincerely appreciate everybody who has donated to the show. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.